Hello, it's Monday, June 29th, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier in Tel Aviv. The interim deal between Iran and the United States is under pressure once again following renewed attacks in the Strait of Hormuz. Today, Iran expert Dr. Meir Javidanfar of Reichman University tells me why the regime is furious about the emerging agreement between Israel and Lebanon and what it could mean for its most important proxy, Hezbollah. Hear our conversation in a moment, but first, the headlines. A shaky ceasefire between the United States and Iran appears to be holding, with both sides agreeing to halt attacks and resume negotiations over the Strait of Hormuz. The two will return to talks in Qatar on Tuesday, this following several days of escalating strikes and counterstrikes, including Iranian attacks on American military facilities in Kuwait and Bahrain. Iran has warned that Israel's ongoing operations against Hezbollah in Lebanon could jeopardize the deal. Israeli forces have destroyed a major Hezbollah tunnel network in southern Lebanon. The 200-meter underground complex was packed with weapons and launch positions intended for attacks on northern Israel. The tunnel near the village of Majdal Zun was buried more than 25 meters underground. The IDF says it was too deep to be destroyed from the air and had to be captured and demolished from within. 20 Hezbollah operatives, including 10 members of the elite Radwan force, were killed during the operation. Lebanon's parliament speaker and key Hezbollah ally, Nabi Berri, has declared that the agreement with Israel will not pass. Berri, the leader of the Amal movement, rejected what he described as an agreement of dictates that failed to protect Lebanon's rights. The proposed framework would pave the way for a formal peace deal between Israel and Lebanon. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has hailed the agreement as a strategic setback for both Iran and Hezbollah. Hezbollah's leader, Naim Qassem, has dismissed it as a surrender to Israel. Azerbaijan has condemned Israel's decision to formally recognize the Armenian genocide, calling the move a distortion of historical facts and urging Jerusalem to reconsider. The shift in Israeli policy comes amid the continued collapse in relations with Ankara. Baku, one of Israel's closest regional partners and a key ally in energy and defense, also maintains close ties with Ankara and has warned the move could deepen regional divisions. And Israel is investing heavily in its southernmost city, with the government approving a five-year, 360 million shekel development plan for Eilat and the surrounding region. The program is designed to expand healthcare, transport and tourism infrastructure while improving emergency preparedness and creating new economic activities. Eilat played a critical role during the war, absorbing tens of thousands of evacuees from communities near Gaza following the October 7th attacks. Prime Minister Netanyahu described Eilat as the southern pearl of Israel and said the investment would strengthen its strategic importance for years to come. Before we get to today's conversation, a reminder, you can sponsor Israel in 10. Just drop us a line at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now here's Dr. Meir Javidanfar. Iran has once again been attacking its neighbours in the Gulf. Can we see this as a kind of a temper tantrum on the part of Tehran about this agreement between Israel and Lebanon?
The Iranians are very unhappy about the situation in Lebanon. They were under the impression the memorandum of understanding, which calls for the end of fighting in Lebanon, would lead to an Israeli withdrawal and limits on Israel's freedom of action, but not on Hezbollah's. Because the memorandum of understanding calls for end of fighting in Lebanon. It does not call on Hezbollah to stop. So the Iranians saw some kind of a guarantee to protect Hezbollah and to get Israel out. They didn't get that. And they are unhappy about that. Also, we have the recent agreement between Israel and Lebanon, which is making Iranian regime very upset. This is in addition to some in Iran who feel buyer's remorse. They feel that if they would have waited a bit longer, they would have gotten a better deal. That Mr. Pezeshkian pressured Mr. Ayatollah Khamenei to do this. So there's a combination of factors, but Lebanon does play a major role.
There are reports of a rift, as you just alluded to, between the political side in Iran, Ghalibaf, Araghchi, Pezeshkian, and the IRGC. And we are hearing that the IRGC did not want this deal at all. Is there evidence of that?
There's always been a split, Laura, Because the IRGC are not answerable to the people regarding the economy. They are more focused on the security of the Islamic Republic and the protection of the regime, which is their main job. But Mr. Pezeshkian sees how bad the situation has gotten. He's the one who receives the reports on the economy. It's not just that there was sanctions, Laura. The American naval blockade was causing massive damage to Iran's economy. Most of Iran's goods are imported via its ports, but they were blockaded, and the land routes were no way sufficient to make up for the amount of products that were imported via sea. So in the absence of the massive volumes that were imported via sea, there was a shortfall, and this pushed up inflation to 80%, which is the highest level in Iran since World War II. And this worried Mr. Pezeshkian. And he basically told Ayatollah Khamenei that Iran could face destabilization. And Ayatollah Khamenei agreed, albeit reluctantly. And now he's put the onus and responsibility for the success of deal on Pezeshkian. But in reality, it's still Ayatollah Khamenei who still has the authority.
Is there still a chance that the Iranian economy could collapse, and could that provoke an uprising?
Not at this point, not from what we know. Look, Laura, the Venezuelan economy collapsed long before Maduro was extradited to the United States, but yet the regime somehow survived. This is the situation in Iran also. The regime maintains control on the streets. Every night it brings tens of thousands of its supporters to protest against America, to protest against Israel, and against those who oppose the Islamic Republic. So the chances of an uprising currently are very low. This is in addition to the fact that most Iranians are focused on just surviving this very tough economic environment. But the regime does face serious economic challenges that cannot be ignored in the long run. To my amazement, Mr. Trump has allowed Iran to sell oil currently for the next 60 days and to receive money for it. This is a very important gain for the Iranians, although there are parts of this MOU, which worries a lot of other parts of the regime. The Trump seems to have switched strategy. He went from confronting the Islamic Republic, the strategy that says you can never reach a deal with the Islamic Republic, you can never coexist with the Islamic Republic because it's a revolutionary state and revolutionary states never change their ideology. And we see that, Laura, from the Soviet regime to the Chinese to the Islamic Republic, and also the Assad regime in Syria and the Saddam regime. Those were revolutionary Ba'athist regimes. The people of those countries never saw a day of peace, either economic peace, meaning no sanctions, or physical peace, meaning no war. These regimes are in constant state of struggle. So President Trump went from the strategy that you cannot reach a deal with them, you have to confront them to force them to accept your terms, to suddenly to what seems to be 180 degrees, to decide that no, the Islamic Republic is misunderstood. If we talk to them, if we reach a deal with them, we can coexist with such a regime. So it's quite a sudden change. But there are some in Iran, the Islamic Republic, who are very suspicious of this sudden change.
I want to ask you about something else that's happening in the region, because yesterday we saw Iraqi forces cracking down on Shia elements, Iran-backed elements. Do you see this perhaps as a wider crackdown on Iranian proxies in the region?
It is, but today the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic, Mr. Araghchi, has arrived in Baghdad, probably to instruct the Iraqi regime not to continue. The Iranian regime looks at Iraq the same way Putin looks at Ukraine. It sees it within its sphere of influence, its gateway to the West, and it does not want Iraq to undertake policies that could be contrary to the interests of the Islamic Republic. The importance of Iraq to the Islamic Republic is very, very high. And I would say that although the steps taken in Baghdad to crack down against the pro-Iranian elements are brave, I am pessimistic, because the Iranian regime has got enough forces and money and resources in Iraq to fight back against the Iraqi government's efforts to have sovereign rule over its own country. Because who is going to back Iraq?
So just snapshot then of the broader region, is Iran's proxy network weaker than it was before October 7th?
It was for a while, but now they're getting stronger again. We see Hamas is rearing its head. You see, we in Israel missed opportunities to translate our military gains into political agreements. This is like turning your efforts into money. You know, you work, you make something, and you want to materialize it into financial resources. In Israel, we're very good at the working, but turning it into something substantive politically, we have not been good at. So as a result, Hamas is back in Gaza, unfortunately. Hezbollah is rearing its head again after a massive blow after the Beepers operation. And the Iranian regime is not going to give up on either organization because it sees them as an important deterrence that needs to be strengthened again. So we have a formidable enemy in the Islamic Republic, Laura, and it is possible that we may have to go to war against them in another 2 to 4 years, maybe without the United States.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10. Thanks for watching or listening, and please do subscribe using the link below. Goodbye.